This is Mouth Media Network, covering the business of lifestyle.
This is American Fashion Podcast. I'm Charles Beckwith, here with Kathy Sheppes.
Hi, Charles.
Hi, Kathy. And across the table from us is Mr. Nick Graham, menswear designer. Hi, Nick.
Hey, how are you?
Welcome back.
It's nice to be back here, and you guys have grown. You're like a big podcast, or whatever you call it.
Well, yeah, I think the right people listen.
Yeah.
You just had an amazing Men's Fashion Week show with astronauts in it and celebrities. Tell me about it.
Right after the last show I did at Men's Week, which was based on Havana in 1958, which was just before the revolution, I decided, as one does, that we should go to Mars. And
makes sense.
It made perfect sense. So I am, and I'm a close friend of Bill Nye, who's a good friend of mine. Bill Nye, the science guy, and I told him, I said, Bill, I want to take everyone to Mars, and I want to transport them in the room, literally, and land them on Mars, and I want you to describe the flight from Earth to Mars, which sounds easy when you describe it. So what I had to do was I worked with Carter Emmert at the American Natural History Museum, who runs the planetarium up there. And he is probably he's the only person in the world who could possibly get the visuals that he has of Mars, which are all mapped by NASA, and then Google has 3D rendered them. So we did it, and we projected these gigantic landscapes, and Bill Nye described the flight from Mars, from Earth to Mars. And we landed on Mars, and then we did the show, and Buzz Aldrin, the second man who walked on the moon, was the first man to walk in Men's Fashion Week. So, and he's 87 years old, and he's hysterical, but the best thing about Buzz Aldrin, he'll say, well, I wasn't the first man to walk on the moon, but I was the first to pee my pants. Seriously.
So being on a runway was nothing.
No, I had Buzz with Richard Branson about 5 years ago at this dinner, and I just at last minute, literally a week before the show, I thought, I'll just reach out to Buzz and see if he's available, and he was. And he was amazing. I mean, he was, what's more amazing is that the next day, it was on the cover of the London Daily Telegraph of Buzz Aldrin, full page, front page. And the show went, we had about 1.2 billion impressions on that show around the world. I had people texting me from Moscow saying, I just saw you on TV. And the show, it was 3.5 minutes long.
That's amazing. So
this is our fourth.
Fourth.
The one we did last time.
How do you top that?
I have no idea. I mean, I've already got the next theme for the next show. Which involves mermaids, so holographic mermaids.
We had Bill D'Arienzo on recently talking about marketing, and we often talk about, for emerging designers, doing a fashion show doesn't make a lot of sense. There's no ROI. But if you can get billions of impressions on a video, then you can sell something. So how do you approach marketing? Because you've really had a gonzo approach to marketing through your whole career, right?
Right.
How do you think about how I get stuff in front of people to sell it?
I don't know. You know, before this, before doing the traditional men's weeks the last four times, I never did a fashion show in New York. With Joe Boxer, we were, you know, with the Joe Boxer experience, we sent underwear to space. We married people in Times Square. We closed New York Fashion Week in Reykjavik in 1997. I can't believe it. We flew 250 people to Reykjavik, closed the, and Fern Malice had a blonde wig on, and we had chartered a Icelandic Air 767. We had massages, and we went horseback riding, and it would, that, again, that was about a 700-800 million impression. We had Entertainment Tonight come, and you know, it's just you kind of create these experiences. I mean, the one thing I love about our shows, they have no front row. I hate front rows, and I hate this whole, you know, it's an experience. And if you've got people's attention for half an hour, you got to give them something that they just won't forget.
So now how do you carry the experience forward, especially now with your collection is really mostly or only e-commerce?
No, it's we're in about 3,000 stores.
Hardly only e-commerce, but
yeah. No, we're in Macy's, Bon-Ton, department stores, Amazon, Nordstrom's, all over the place.
I think when you were on our last episode, you'd not really gone that far with it.
No, it's I had this dream of doing an e-commerce business, but it's I'm a traditional retailer, dude, which, you know, I mean, that's still, 87% of retail sales are still occurring in bricks and mortar.
Right. I mean, that many doors in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's your reputation. But then, so what are you, which is great, what are you, how do you direct the stores to, basically what Charles is talking about is Bill DiRenzo, who's a luxury marketing kind of guru, had also spoken a lot about, you have to keep the consumer engaged,
right,
entertained.
Well, I call basic marketing and branding is building an emotional relationship with an inanimate object. That's all it is. And so how do you create that emotional revenue? You know, there's financial revenue, which is sales. Emotional revenue is much more, it's hard to pin down, but it's, it's why people, I always use the Ralph Lauren as the example, who I think is a genius. I mean, but he's got that thing. And I've always said the brand is the amusement park and the product is the souvenir. So you create this amusement park emotionally about this lifestyle that you live, and you live in Connecticut with 3.2 wonderful children and a half golden lab, and that's your world of Ralph Lauren. But you buy the polo shirt as a souvenir of that experience, which you might never have, but still, you bought the souvenir. So by doing Mars or Iceland, we just kind of create another experience that's much more eccentric and much more, it's not rooted in any tradition, which I think is important, I mean, I like to show up where people don't expect you to be. It's like, oh, he's gone to Mars and under places. And I think that keeps the consumer engaged in ways that they might not otherwise think of.
So talk about what is he thinking today? I mean, I actually feel as if I see more well-dressed men in the work environment, or in the financial district or whatever, than I do women. So what's that all about? It's happening naturally, or is it...
Well, are they reading something, or
trying to copy something?
No, I mean, there's a lot of dynamics going on about where men's wear is going right now. One of the main things that's really changing is the workplace. 86% of the companies in this country are 20 people or less. Mm-hmm. 99% of the companies in this country are 100 people or less. So that's one, which accounts for about 60% of the workforce, and that segment of company is adding to 75% of the jobs growth in this country. So there's a huge change in terms of what a company is and what an office is. And if you look at like these shared office experiences like WeWork, which is just blowing up, right? I mean, so now people are crawling out of their living rooms, these little entrepreneurs, and there's a place for them to go. And so, but it's not a suit and tie place. It's a place that,
It's a step up from Starbucks.
Yeah, it is, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Howard Schultz always says Starbucks was the third place between work and home. I mean, that's the brilliance of what Starbucks is, mm-hmm. right? So, and I think WeWork is now kind of taken that, or Workville and these places, they've taken that thing and kind of created this place, environment where people can go and work.
We're sitting in one Voyager HQ here on 25th Street in Manhattan, and Kathy signed in at the tablet when she came into the space, and then they immediately emailed her saying there's wine
services
in the kitchen, there's beer taps, and
that was the first thing I tuned into on the memo.
Really?
I was like, I didn't know there's wine in the kitchen. No, but that you can rent workspace out,
and so subsequently in menswear, because the workplace is changing, things like ties are, the tie business is terrible.
So are most of the ties.
Well, they are. I mean, you know, I mean, we make ties, but we make more contemporary two and a quarter inch. Because the guy who's going to buy a tie is going to be a contemporary guy. Unless he works at, you know, IBM out in Poughkeepsie, or, you know, that kind of look. Or John Gotti, who's not around anymore, but he wore like 5-inch ties. It was amazing. And then if they're not wearing ties, what they are is wearing now patterned shirts, you know. So we sell a lot of, the dress shirt business is changing. You know, it's not just white and blue anymore. It's patterns, it's paisleys, it's florals, it's, you know, it's something that like, it's like Paul Smith has been doing for years. And that's now acceptable in the workplace.
There was actually a whole article in the Wall Street Journal, which I found kind of shocking. It was almost a half-page article, and it was like, is it okay? Is it acceptable to wear a shirt under a jacket without a tie?
Really?
The yes side and the no side, yeah. I was like, wow. Well, I must be running out of things to write. But
before this current administration, you know, Obama was a tie, the White House was a tie-free zone. And, you know, even Justin Trudeau in Canada sometimes doesn't even wear a shirt to work. So, sorry, that's a joke. You have to know him. He's cute, though, right?
Adorable.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean that you're any less professional by not wearing a tie. But I love, we make suits, and I love that.
So is that a small portion of your business,
no,
really?
No, it's actually getting really big.
Oh, it is? Okay. Because I see... You know, maybe it's just more fun now also because men are starting to buy more fashion, you know, buying proportions and slim pants and shorter. And
yeah. No, I mean, our suit business is great. And what we do is, you know, we have patterns and colors and checks, you know, still very wearable, but it's much more contemporary looking. I mean, we sell a store in Milwaukee called Bonton, you know, and it's a traditional department store, but we sell this plaid suit, a full suit. Like blue plaid is subtle, but it's a full suit, and people are, it's the best seller, you know. In a sea of black and gray and, you know, dark blue, I mean, you know, again, the guy's kind of trying to find his own individual sense of who he is.
Right.
I mean, it's another thing is when I started Joe Boxer in 1985, Jesus, when I was 9 or 3, I can't remember, you know, 80% of men's underwear was bought by women. And now 80% of men's underwear is bought by men. So men are, you know, men are not, you know, revolutionary, they're evolutionary, so at least they're buying their underwear. But and so
that's good to know.
Again, it goes into their this confidence of a guy looking better, you know. And women look stunning all the time. I mean, you dress so much better than we do.
Well, that can change.
Yeah.
So do you have a whole design team here, or what's your setup?
We have 7,000 people around the world. I'm kidding. No, it's just me and a couple people. So I do everything on PowerPoint.
Oh, really? Yeah. That works.
I don't know how to do Photoshop or Illustrator. I just do PowerPoint.
So how do you inspire them?
Who?
Oh, so is it really just a small team?
Yeah, totally.
Well, it looks like a big collection.
It's a big collection, but, you know... The one thing I learned from my experience is there's a million people doing a million things. I mean, really, at the end of the day, there's one or two things to do in a business. It's one, create a great product, and two, ship it. I mean, really nothing matters besides that. And, of course, there's layers of marketing and stuff, but, you know, we don't use an agency and never have.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, for this last show, I hired a great PR firm, Nadine Johnson, in New York, just to get people in the room. And she's brilliant. I think she's the best. So.
And are you involved in Joe Boxer anymore or no?
No. Mm-hmm. It's owned by Iconics. And
right.
Still does, it's about $600 million a year at Kmart, which is incredible, right?
Yeah.
For a company I started because I needed underwear. Was too cheap to buy it.
So what do you think? Any observations on the underwear market in general? I mean, looking at Calvin now, you think that's a...
it's
like they're stepping up their ads again now.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean,
it's... the Moonlight cast and... It's kind
but,
of cool.
I, you know, I mean...
think it'll make a difference or change?
Actually launching underwear this fall
under
my brand. And it's fun to kind of start wading back into it because I haven't been around it for a while, but... I still see there's a void in it. And where I see voids is, you know, it's not just where's the white space, it's where's the emotional white space. Where's the where's the sense of personality that is not existing in the department? I mean, Calvin, you know, is brilliant in terms of that segment. He's got that covered. And, you know, but in terms of where I want to take it, I'd call it Joboxer 5.0. I don't know. So it's fun. And now I get to wear underwear again. I haven't worn it for years.
It's great.
Kidding.
So tell us about your Fashion Maverick Award.
Oh, that's so cool.
Or you're not, or you're going to be like honored, right? Is that, that's coming, or?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's April, sometimes in April. No, it's an honor, actually. I mean, of course, I think they had to create the award to give it to me, but I was thinking of dressing like a cowboy, you know, because it's Maverick, and like, I just think it's lovely to be, honored. Because I'm not a very Seventh Avenue kind of guy, you know.
Who's giving the award? What?
It's the American Association, American Apparel and Footwear.
Oh.
Yeah. No, and it's with
Andrew Rosen being honored.
No, it's highly cool.
Women's Wear Daily.
Yeah.
Ed Nardoza.
Yeah. Who's amazing.
It's pretty exciting.
And it's hosted by, what's his name? Scottish actor. It's hysterical. In fact, I want to dress him for the awards, so. I can't remember his name. Sorry. Everyone's gone blank. Yeah. He was in Cabaret. He was,
I'm not going blank. That's just, I never come up with anybody's name.
I know, I don't either. Anyway, it'll be fun. But it's lovely to be honored.
So, you know, everybody's trying to, I think people with their own business are always trying to think kind of out of the box, and you seem to think out of the box. Does that mean that you try to think, how do you, when you want to
I don't think there is a box.
Stimulate some different thinking.
Right.
Yeah. How do you do that? How do you get there?
Well, I don't think there is a box. Mm. And if you start to think there is one, then, I mean, there are certain things that you have to conform to in terms of, there's the left brain and right brain of a business. And there's a left brain and a right brain of everybody. And so, you know, the functional part of a business has to, as I said before, create great product and ship it. And then the other side of it is, even the product doesn't have to conform to any standards. I mean, why does a suit have to be black? Why can't it be a green plaid, you know? What is that?
Is it Billy Connolly?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you said funny Scottish actor, and he's the only one I know.
Oh, no, it isn't. I thought.
Oh.
I couldn't read. Billy Connolly's a friend of mine.
Oh.
And he's got Parkinson's, and so I thought you were saying he's passed away.
Oh, no. I was wondering if he was the actor.
Billy Connolly. No, it's someone else.
He's a
else.
Friend of Seth's also.
Who, Billy?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. Anyway, I love comedians, but. I work with Eddie Izzard.
Comedians are good.
Did some work with Robin Williams years ago and stuff. So comedians are, you know.
Well, you have a sense of humor. I think that's probably also helped you.
Well, I think a sense of humor is like women, I think, find something, a great sense of humor in a man to be attractive.
Totally.
Totally. See? That works, right? I mean, it does. And it's like.
But I think people that work with you find it attractive to have a sense of humor. It helps to.
Yeah. I mean, I don't take any of this very seriously, but I do. But it's so if it's. I love what I do.
When you think back on Joe Boxer, was it like, wow, I can't believe that really worked? Or, you know, was there some way, some angle that you took that you think back on now and think, wow, how did that work?
Total naivety. You know, we were in San Francisco. We weren't part of the the New York scene. And I think that was part of it. It's like we didn't really give a shit, you know. It was like, well, this is what we want to do, you know. But it wasn't kind of antagonistic. It was just kind of, well, we can do anything we want, right?
I mean, right.
You know, if we maybe had been in New York, it might have been a different company. Might not have even been a company. But I think there's something about San Francisco that, well, not anymore because it's gotten really like over-engineered and, you know, dot-commed and stuff. But they're the one thing about the Bay Area was that there's a very, you know, open kind of thinking thought process. I mean, you know, Silicon Valley exists because of Acid. I mean, if you really look at it, it was the combination of Stanford and Acid. I mean, seriously. I mean, if you look at the whole history of the Bay Area, it's based around this, the counterculture in the 60s, you know, and that's where all of this kind of modern thinking came from. So, and I think that we maybe had a little of that in our company. Not Acid, I'm not saying that at all. Just saying.
And now, so what's next?
I'm actually working on a band right now, which is really going to be fun. It's called Nick Graham and the Vagabonds, and the show is called Soundtracks from Films Never Made. And so you have to stay in touch with that.
Really? Yeah. That's fascinating.
So it's a real, it's a big band. A 10-piece big band orchestra, but it's and there, every song is a story around a film that never been made. How's that for weird?
That's great. You're launching that in New York. Like, where are we?
Yeah,
in New York?
I'll be doing the first shows this fall.
Wow.
So, but no, look, at the business is great. I love it. I mean, we're launching not a lot of new categories. So,
you doing accessories?
Underwear, accessories, hosiery.
But leather goods? Or?
Yeah, small leather goods. Outerwear. Next year I want to do footwear.
Wow.
And then into... We have a lot of interest from the Far East right now, from China, Asia, from China, Korea, and Japan. Because this look for that market is very, very strong. And our price points are not crazy. I mean, we're not, you know... We're not a $700 suit. We're $250 suit. And so I believe in the democracy of pricing.
So are you happy with how the stores are handling your collection?
No, some of them for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, retail, you know, I mean, I just read the foot traffic was down, 14% in February, which is, you know, people are not shopping in their traditional ways, as we know that. And it's not all because of .com. It's because of, are the stores really giving the consumer what they want anymore? I mean, if you look at the growth of TJ Maxx, you know, I mean, it's not just Amazon that's taking the business. It's all these different, you know, discounters and so on.
And then there's also more specialty stores.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of New York as well, right, to shop in that are... A nicer environment.
Oh yeah.
Kind of more service.
Right.
How much do you watch the industry in general? How aware of it do you stay?
Very aware of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you see younger designers making a lot of mistakes still?
I don't know, man. I'm thinking about that. It depends what segment of the market you're in. I mean, it's good to make mistakes. It's okay. But it's you know, it's a very tough market. If you look at the channel that we're in, which is department stores and, you know, big box people, it's a brutal world to get in. But if you're in, you have to withstand the craziness of the discounting and the markdowns and the this, that, and the other thing. I mean, that's you know, which is why in many ways some stores. Haven't been able to give the innovation and the selection to their customer, because the smaller designers who really should be giving that innovation and selection to those stores can't afford to deal with them, you know? And so these stores Macy's gets into this problem of like, okay, we want to bring in innovation and the cool stuff, but the vendor structure, that vendor can't support what we need from them.
Right.
So they'll just go back and buy more from...
X, Y, Z.
The government, as I call them. So that's the challenge. So, but in the smaller tier, I think that there's a lot of great specialty stores supporting younger designers here. As I said, it's good to make mistakes. It's just, you know, stay true to your, it's always say stay true to your vision and it'll work out. It doesn't really work out that way. Sometimes it does, and, you know, but, you know, you also have to be really aware of where the market is, where the customer is, what's important. Just because you think it's important doesn't mean everyone else will. And it's one of the best things, you know, someone said to me, said it's better to have 100 people love something than 1,000 people like it. So find those 100 people who love what you do and start there.
Right. Who is your customer?
I call him the perennial millennial.
I love that.
Yeah, it's the guy, basically.
All inclusive.
It's all, it's such.
No guilt.
I hate demographics.
Yeah, I think we all do.
But so much of fashion is driven by statistics at the scale you work with. How much do you have to pay attention to the numbers, or how much do you kind of take leaps of faith to get further down the line?
Well, I'm not a big focus group kind of guy. I just make stuff that I want to wear. Really, I'm too cheap to buy clothing, so I start companies. But
well, no, that's focus.
That is a focus, right? I can't remember the question. I was.
How much of a numbers game is it at that scale?
It's a numbers game. You know, it's gross margin, it's sourcing, it's you know getting to the right price point, so the consumer, you know, the higher the price you go, the less the percentage market share you'll have, right? I mean, it's not that you have to be, you know, down and dirty, but, you know, finding what is the balance. And then it's, you know, for the first couple of years of this business, we took our hits in terms of, okay, I wanted to be this, and the market was going, no, we kind of like that. We think you need to be this, and you need to be at this price. And I was going, well, I'm going to do it my way, but no. And, you know, we had to find the right factories to be able to produce this product that we could, you know, make it all work. And, you know, I mean, I was trying to go maybe faster than a lot of men wanted to go in terms of the look. Mm. But now they're adopting it, and we've kind of got the rhythm going. So it's you know, but, and it's always a couple, the first 3 years of a business are critical. The first year you figure out exactly what you are. You take your hit. Second year it starts to gel in your mind and the market's mind of what you represent, and then you get your sourcing and your production ready, and the third year is really when you launch. I mean, the first year is not a launch year. The third year is always a launch year, I think.
Yeah, Seth and I have fielded a lot of questions from emerging designers about how much money do I need to start a line, and we say you need like 3 or 4 years worth of cash just to get started. You can't start without some way of keeping going. You can't rely on this season paying for next season, because it won't until you get further down the road.
I think money is useful, but money is also dangerous, because it, you know, if you rest like, okay, I've got to have $1 million in the bank before I can even turn the lights on, lights ain't never going to go on, to tell you the truth. I mean, and you're going to be so diluted in your equity or whatever. I mean, it's you know, I mean, look, I started Joe Boxer with a sewing machine in an apartment in San Francisco, and I'd sew the underwear in the morning and then go sell it in the afternoon because I didn't have a green card. Because I'm Canadian, by the way.
I think it's harder now, though.
It's totally harder.
And I think, you know, you're not going to get paid quickly.
No.
For sure, right? I mean, that's where you're coming from in terms of needing 2 years worth of cash, or
I mean, if you can get a year's worth, and it depends what, you know, A, you want to make, and A, what your rent is. Don't go get a big loft in the back of your kitchen, or, you know, I mean, you know, I'm Scottish, so I'm cheap. What can I say? But, you know, kind of like really be, you know, watch it. And believe in, and make it maybe, don't make like a lot of products, just make one thing really good, you know?
Yeah, that's a mistake a lot of people make.
Yeah.
They say, I have to have a full collection. Why?
No.
Just make pants.
Yeah, just make a great pant.
Or underpants.
I mean, Bonobo started with just that pant. I mean, you know, that fit. I mean, that was his, you know, DKNY started with five easy pieces, and God, it's years ago, but, you know, just make one thing and make it really good. Like sweaters, make a great sweater. And something that's not necessarily inventory intensive and stuff, you know, I don't know.
Well, and you're in a lot of doors. So being in a lot of doors, how have you controlled really your collection from getting so broad to appeal to what everybody's asking for? Or do they just take your direction, so to speak?
They just take the direction.
Well, that's
We're not reinventing the wheel here, I'll be honest with you. I mean, it's like, but we are adding another element of style to a traditional category. I mean, it's like the underwear business was years ago. It's owned the dress shirt and neckwear and even the tailored clothing business is owned by a couple of big guys, right, who control the market. But at the same time, there's an opening there that they're, you know, that they're not addressing and they're too big to address.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's where the opening is. And I don't know.
It's not easy.
It's not easy, but it's fun. You know, if you got to love it. I love it. I love what I do. I love thinking about it all the time. I love, you know, working it and creating new stuff. And
so what's inspiring for you? What do you do to get freshened up mentally?
Mentally? God, what do? I write, actually, music. I changed the subject of clothing. I love to read interesting books. I'm reading a great book right now called Hitmakers, which is a really interesting book.
I'm on the third chapter.
Are you really?
Reading the same book, yeah.
It's cool, right?
Yeah.
It's about why things become popular. It's this Hitmakers, the study of what's it called?
I think it's something like Why Things Become Popular. It's pretty simple.
It's a little more sophisticated than that, but that's the thing. And he studies music and he studies, you know, all these different forms of why things are popular. And basically it comes down to Raymond Loewy's theory of Maya, you know, most advanced yet approachable, you know, where he takes something that's like something familiar and add an element of new on top of it.
Mm.
And then you've got then you got popular. It's like that. There's that band that does that. You know that band that does. They do one song, but there's only one song in the world that if you actually look at
the core.
There is. There's one song, and then he does all the hit songs. They do all the hit songs on top of it. He mentions it in the book. It's all just one song. It's just the chorus has changed. I know
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Take the tried and true.
Yeah.
Mix it up a little.
But I was thinking about that in context in terms of this, why the Buzz Aldrin show was so successful. It was because we took something that was familiar in to a lot of the world and put it into a place that was new, and which creates this dynamic.
Like that goes all the way back to, we knew about this with like the Greeks writing plays. And
Or
the Romans, if you think of something familiar and something peculiar,
right?
Something for everyone, a comedy tonight. You know, funny way on the. No, anything happened on the way to the forum.
Exactly. No, there's only been one joke for the last 9,000 years. I mean, a guy walks in a bar, a Roman walks in a bar, a Greek walks in a bar. You know, it can go on and on, right?
I'm the only one that doesn't know the one joke.
There's only one joke, one song, ever. But it's funny you're reading that book because it's interesting.
Yeah, there's also only two plots to a movie: A Stranger Comes to Town or The Hero Goes on a Journey.
Right.
And every movie you can think of, every book that follows any kind of narrative, it's one way or the other.
Yeah.
And it's binary. It's like math or science. It's yes or no.
Right. No, we like repetition. We just like it served different ways. It's like we're having chicken tonight, but we're having chicken.
Well, that's true. It's comfortable. Repetition is comforting.
Yeah. I mean, even
though you like to think it's different. If it's familiar, you're good with it.
Well, that's why, you know, songs, the one songwriter in Sweden, I can't remember his name, yeah, he's the master of songwriting. He'll pump out the hits. And he is, it's a math. There's a science to it, you know. And it's not like, which is why I like, you know, I love being in menswear because I do not understand women's clothing at all. I just don't understand the variations and the this and the that. I mean, guys are so easy. They wear pants and a shirt and a jacket and a sweater sometimes. I mean, it's so all we've done is it's like underwear business. You know, all we did is add a little more character and a little more style to it. We haven't reinvented. You know,
it's slowly reinventing, I think. 20 years from now, it'll be menswear? Completely different. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, I mean it's especially in the United States. It's where you go to Europe and you know there's a dandy on every corner. You know, like, you know the Italians and you go to Capri with the guys, their sweaters tied around their necks.
Right.
I find hysterical. It's like 5 o'clock kicks in and all the Caprician men
perfectly
show up
tied.
With sweaters. But in the United States, it's a little harder.
The Hamptons, maybe you say it.
Yeah, but not Omaha. And the guys are my, I'm after the guys in Omaha. I mean, you know, because I think that, I won't go political, but if maybe the dress is a little cooler, you know.
It's interesting. It's easier to appeal to people who think similarly. And when you get to New York and you get to Los Angeles, people have hopefully more complex ideas, but that makes it harder to market to them.
Right.
Or maybe I'm thinking that completely wrong and just insulted half of America.
I think so. I'm like, oops.
But, well, I think, I mean, you still have people watching television and people driving down the road, so that puts people in a different mode. If you don't drive to work, that means people in New York have a different way of approaching their day,
right?
Which just puts you off in a completely different direction. But
right.
I don't know to what extent that can affect what you decide to buy to wear.
Yeah. Well, I mean, someone like, I think Justin Timberlake, in terms of the way he styled that, you know, suit and tie thing was cool. I mean, you know, this new looking guy. And then if you look at like even the Grammy red carpet, right? I mean, there's a lot of influence that is streaming out into the middle of America with from that point of view. It's Ryan Gosling in a blue tuxedo. It's,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
It's there is this, and there's this, you know, GQ does an amazing job and of getting that, you know, vision out there even more and more. And I think that from what I can see, I mean, we sell as many floral shirts in Dallas as we, you know, to men as we do in New York. I mean, so.
But you did talk about television obviously has a huge influence on people.
Yeah.
And
less
what they're
so
wearing.
Now. I mean, a lot more people, are skipping commercials and going with the streaming stuff. So it's harder to reach people that through that medium.
You know, if you think about Netflix and.
Yeah.
Watching Robin Wright or whoever, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a lot of influence. I don't know if there's as much in the male category.
I just dressed, actually, Bill Nye is doing a series on Netflix. It starts in April. It's called Bill Nye Saves the World, and it's 13 episodes.
Oh, thank God.
I know. And I dressed him for every episode.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, he looks so good. I mean, I love it, you know. Some people have supermodels as muses, and I have Bill Nye, because, you know, I respect him enormously. I think his influence on culture and science and millennials, I hate that word, but, you know, he's got such a following of, like, you know, people who grew up watching him in the 90s and later. I mean, and it still resonates, you know? So
well, it goes back to that thing from the Hitmaker's book, where if you've seen it before, you're more likely to like it
right.
when you see it.
Right.
That repetition is, it gets people to like things more. And they're so they know him from childhood, so he's more familiar.
Right.
And they would go with him rather than another celebrity
yeah.
that is less known to them.
No, I like that. In the book as well, he describes if you walk into a room at a party and you don't know anybody, right? And you're going, oh, God, this is like, I don't know, what am I doing here? And then you see someone across the room that you recognize and that you like, the party changes entirely. And it becomes, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's this, I love that.
Right, you enter a different comfort zone.
Yeah. The party breaks down to another into another place, you know.
Then you feel comfortable that you're there, and then you start worrying about what you're wearing.
Right. And then you got to go, I got to go home and change.
When in doubt, wear black.
Yeah. Mars is the new black. That's what I say. But no, it's, I don't know. It's you know, especially these days in this country, I just think, you know, be creative as push it as far as you can and just don't stop and don't get down. I mean, you know.
Well, and dressing is can absolutely make you feel better.
Yeah.
Especially wearing, I mean, I love that you wear patterns and you mix them and
right.
You just, as opposed to wearing all one color.
Yeah. I wear usually one color. Well, I wear one color, but there's got a lot of stuff going around on that one color, but you know.
No, it's interesting. I mean, I saw you come in at a, I was at a networking event recently. I can't remember where it was, in the 40s.
Right.
Street, that is, not in the 1940s. And you had like four different
patterns.
Yeah, four different patterns in white jeans. And I was like, wow, that's, you know, you stand out in a crowd.
Yeah, well, you know.
More people need to dress that way.
I'm working on it. I mean, really, I mean, it's fun. It's, you know, I always hear this thing guys say, oh, I could never wear that. I mean, I want to do a TV show or a segment on a TV show called I Could Never Wear That and take these guys and, you know, I don't know what that means, I could never wear that. I mean,
I couldn't pull it off?
It's physiological, psychological, is it, it's not me. I mean, that's, what it means. It's not, it doesn't mean that you couldn't wear this. It's just, it doesn't fit into who you perceive yourself as a person or.
Yeah.
I mean, some people don't want to wear, you know, polka-dotted sweaters.
Or that nobody else is wearing it, so they don't feel like they can wear it.
Well, it's unfamiliar.
Right.
Right. There you go.
It's that's right.
Hmm. Yeah.
No, familiarities. But at the same time, I don't think the choices, there have been a lot of great choices, in, especially menswear. There's amazing, great brands. There's, you know, great designers and stuff. But I'll be honest. I'm a commercial guy, right? I mean, I'm like a department store dude, and I want to reach as many guys as I can, as fast as I can, and make them all look great, you know. But it's like McDonald's. You only eat. You know, McDonald's is successful because there's one on every corner. And so, okay, I'm going to go eat there because it's there, right? But if we can be, you know, the salad bar.
And what designers do you think are doing great in menswear besides you?
I like John Elliott a lot. I think he's great. I think he does a really good job. I like Barbados. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Of course, I love Paul Smith. You know, I always have. You know, he's reliable. I think Ralph is brilliant. I mean, the consistency of his vision consistently.
Menswear is phenomenal.
It's, you know. But the layers of, you know, you go to the store and it's like, you go to the mansion right uptown and it's like, the displays are so perfect, right? I mean, just like, everything about it is just like, Jesus, you know, who spends all their time doing this? But it's so genius, you know, the way it's mm-hmm. done. I'm trying to think of what else.
So will you open your own stores?
I'd love to, yeah. No, I'd love to have one open by the end of this year. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
You better hurry.
Why?
Are you, is it in
it's
the
March.
Is it, yeah, it's, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I guess it can happen that fast.
Yeah. Mm. No, I mean, I'm talking like in a department, I'm talking a small,
mm-hmm.
I just got to get it out, you know, like, you know, I'd love to, because every season we do themes, you know, like, I'd love to do a whole Mars store, like, you know, and then it changes into the next theme, which is holographic mermaids. So
that'd be great.
Yeah, I'd love to have stores, yeah. And also fragrance. I mean, fragrance is something I'm working on right now, so.
Which is...
How do you work on fragrance? I don't have a good sense of smell. I like Chanel No. 5. I wear that even though it's supposed to be
a
women's cologne. Yeah.
Well, Chanel No. 5...
I can't smell the other ones very well, though.
I've worked on fragrances before, and in fact, my girlfriend has this very high-end fragrance, and long story, but we started the world's largest patchouli plantation in Borneo, so I know a lot about essential oils and fragrances. But I mean, fragrance is poetry. Fragrance is telling a story through. It's not just the scent; it's the whole vision of Justin Bieber. Kidding. But fragrance is
that's a vision of a traffic accident in Florida.
Exactly. But he is Canadian, so I'll stay off him right now.
They almost deported him over that one.
I know. But no, fragrance is fascinating. I just love it. Where it's in the whole world of you go to some of these perfumers and he goes, this scent is based on a rose that is 42 days old, and it's 6 a.m. in Provence, and it is opened, and a small girl is driving by on a bicycle, and her dress is willowing in the sun, and the sun is reflecting off the rose. That's what this smells like, They go on and on, but that's what they do. They conjure these poems, I think.
Yeah.
My girlfriend's fragrance is called Strange Love New York, and it's based on oud, which is from the agarwood tree in Malaysia, which is it's basically fungus, and it's very popular in the Middle East, and it's like insanely popular in the Middle East. I mean, it's very expensive. It's more than I think it's $30,000-$40,000 a liter for this. But
wow,
that's an expensive oud.
It's expensive oud. Yeah, so that's the high end, and then you water it, and then you put water it down, and her raw materials are some of the most expensive in the world, but then you do a Britney Spears for cologne fragrance. It's not a cologne, sorry, Britney. it's a perfume, and that's just it's that 2 second thing, which is You walk by someone, a sprayer on a department store, and they spray you. That's the extent of the relationship. So you got to hit them in 2 seconds or they're gone, right? So.
Yeah.
But the story in the commercial can definitely get you.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the one on Saturday Night Live the other night. It was pretty funny.
No, I didn't.
You just watch it. It's a fake commercial on someone we know.
They've never been better.
Huh?
SNL has never been better.
Oh, I know. It's had the highest ratings it's had in 25 years.
They finally have something to chew on again.
I know. Exactly. I mean, it's unending. I mean, they could do it Monday Night Live, Tuesday Night Live. There's like something every day of the week. That's why I write Rachel Maddow, because she's always,
on it first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nick, this has been great.
Thank you
for coming.
So much.
Yeah, this is fun.
Appreciate it. And congratulations on your success. And
thank you. You
and
too.
And you.
On American Pod.
Congratulations.
Yeah. No, it's fun. If it's not fun, I don't want to do it.
Right.
We'll talk to you next week. Our website is AmericanFashionPodcast.com. You can find episode summaries and links to companies and articles mentioned in the show, plus a feedback form, a list of all our episodes with links to the old ones, a Be a Guest form in case you really have something to say, as well as a sign-up page for invitations to our live events, all there at AmericanFashionPodcast.com. You can contact us through voicemail at 646-979-8709 or by writing to info@AmericanFashionPodcast.com. We are on Twitter @AFPOD and on Instagram @AmericanFashionShow. American Fashion Podcast is produced by the Fashion Media Center as part of the Mouth Media Network. Listen to our other fashion-related shows from Mouth Media Network, such as Fashion is Your Business, Material is Your Business, and Beauty is Your Business, wherever podcasts are slung. American Fashion Podcast reaches thousands of fashion designers and industry insiders with every episode and has been downloaded well beyond 1 million times. For sponsorship and advertising inquiries, send an email to info@AmericanFashionPodcast.com. with sponsorship in the subject line. Episodes of American Fashion Podcast are copyrighted by Open Source Business Incorporated and Mouth Media Network Incorporated. All rights reserved.